Starting Grid. Die Formel-1-Show mit Kevin Scheuren und Ole Waschkau wird dir präsentiert von motorsporttotal.com und formel1.de. Keep racing. Auf meinsportpodcast.de.
Einen schönen guten Tag und herzlich willkommen zu Starting Grid, eurem Formel-1-Magazin hier auf meinsportpodcast.de. Ich bin Kevin Scheuren und begrüße euch ganz herzlich zu einer super, super Sonderausgabe nach den Weihnachtsfeiertagen. Wir von Starting Grid, natürlich auch Ole Waschkau und Christian Nimmervoll, der Chefredakteur unserer Partner motorsporttotal.com, formel1.de und de.motorsport.com, hoffen, dass ihr ein wunderbares Weihnachtsfest mit euren Familien hattet. Natürlich auch jegliche anderen tollen Festtage, wenn ihr jetzt nicht so weihnachtsaffin seid oder Weihnachten vielleicht gar nicht feiert. Wir hoffen, dass ihr auch da einfach mal ein paar ruhige Tage mit der Familie oder für euch hattet. Ja, und jetzt geht's weiter, ne? Heute ist der 28.12.2018. Das Jahr neigt sich dem Ende entgegen und es war ein fabelhaftes Jahr für uns hier bei Starting Grid. Es bleibt uns, bevor wir heute zum Highlight kommen, mal die Zeit, Danke zu sagen. Danke für die Treue in diesem Jahr. Wir haben auf jeden Fall ein sehr erfolgreiches Jahr hinter uns, wir haben ein sehr interessantes Jahr hinter uns, ein gesprächiges Jahr hinter uns, wir hatten wirklich viele Ausgaben in diesem Jahr, könnt ihr alle im Archiv auf meinsportpodcast.de, bei iTunes und bei anderen Podcatchern auf jeden Fall nochmal nachhören. Wir hatten viele tolle Gäste, hatten sehr viel Spaß miteinander, nicht nur wir hier in der Sendung, sondern auch mit euch, ja, in unserer Starting Grid F1 Fans Facebook-Gruppe, unserer Telegram-Gruppe, der Messenger, wo ihr eure Handynummer gar nicht unbedingt angeben braucht, @StartingGrid, dort einfach mal suchen. Überall, wo wir euch gesehen haben, hatten wir Spaß und wir möchten uns bei euch bedanken, dass ihr 2018 zu einem solch erfolgreichen Jahr für Starting Grid gemacht habt und ihr könnt euch sicher sein, dass wir für 2019 hart arbeiten, euch tolle Gäste zu präsentieren, neue Formate zu präsentieren, euch zu unterhalten, zu informieren und einfach für euch die Qualität zu liefern, die ihr verdient für diesen kostenfreien Podcast rund um die Formel 1. Wir möchten uns auch bedanken bei dem Partner motorsporttotal.com, formel1.de und de.motorsport.com, dass sie uns regelmäßig unterstützen, dass sie ja unsere Ausgaben auch bei Facebook teilen, dass sie uns so einfach auch noch einer breiteren Masse zur Verfügung stellen, als es durch euch eh schon ist. Und an euch da draußen, teilt uns, sagt es den Leuten, dass es Starting Grid gibt, sagt es den Leuten, dass es diesen Formel 1 Podcast gibt, rezensiert uns bei iTunes mit 5 Sternen, tut und macht, wie ihr könnt, um diesen Podcast noch erfolgreicher, noch bekannter zu machen. Liked uns auf unserer Facebook-Seite MSP Grid, dort einfach mal danach suchen und nutzt bei Twitter den Hashtag StartingGridMSP, um das zu tun. Und dann werden wir 2019 zu einem richtig, richtig geilen Jahr machen. Freue mich jetzt schon drauf. Echt, freue mich wirklich drauf. Zwei Ausgaben haben wir noch bis Silvester sozusagen. An Silvester die große F1 Deutschland Podcast Silvester Gala. Da wird euch was ganz Spannendes erwarten. Ich glaube auch sehr interessant ist für uns alle das erste Mal, dass wir sowas machen. Aber mir war das ganz wichtig, mal alle Formel 1 Podcasts aus Deutschland einzuladen. Und ich habe sie alle bekommen. Ich hoffe, die kommen auch wirklich alle und nicht, dass wir dann da in der Aufzeichnung sitzen und dann fehlt jemand. Das wird sehr interessant, das wird ein richtig cooler Jahresabschluss nochmal. Dann machen wir ein bisschen Pause. Wie lange, das wissen wir nicht, weil wir haben einige Sachen im Köcher, die vielleicht schon relativ an Jahresanfang interessant werden könnten. Da werden wir natürlich Ausgaben posten, aber ansonsten uns auch einfach mal eine kurze Pause gönnen, 2-3 Wochen. Einfach mal auch ein bisschen erholen von dieser langen Formel-1-Saison, von dieser langen Podcast-Saison. Und dann stehen die Testfahrten ja schon an, die ja, wie wir wissen, auf F1-TV gezeigt werden. Gibt uns natürlich die Möglichkeit, viel darüber zu sprechen, zu analysieren, zu kommentieren. Und da werden wir natürlich dann auch für euch schon am Start sein. Heute das Highlight, ich würde nicht sagen des Jahres, weil es gab viele Highlights in diesem Jahr. Ich würde sagen, es ist schwierig, das Highlight in Sachen Interviews rauszupicken. Aber eins dieser Highlights auf jeden Fall, Olivier Panis, der ehemalige Formel-1-Fahrer für Teams wie Toyota, Prost, Ligier, Testfahrer für McLaren, Mercedes, BAR Honda. Er hat sich Zeit für uns genommen im Rahmen der Bekanntgabe von René Binder, der ehemalige GP2-Fahrer, Österreicher, der für das ELMS-Team Panis-Barthez Competition fahren wird in der ELMS-Serie nächstes Jahr auch. Die 24 Stunden von Le Mans, wenn ihr da ein kleines Video, was ich dazu gemacht habe, sehen wollt, geht mal auf motorsporttotal.com in den Langstreckenbereich und dort findet ihr das Video. Olivier Panis hat sich sehr, sehr viel Zeit genommen im Posthotel Zell am Ziller. Hat er sich fast eine Stunde genommen. Eigentlich war eine halbe Stunde geplant, aber wir haben so gut geredet und so gut gehört. Ich wollte ihn nicht unterbrechen, Christian sowieso nicht. Und er, glaube ich, hatte auch richtig Bock drauf, ein bisschen über die Formel 1 zu quatschen, über seine Karriere zu reden. 1994 kam er in die Formel 1, 2004 endete seine Karriere dann. Ja, und sie startete ja fulminant mit dem zweiten Platz in Hockenheim 1994, dann der zweite Platz in Australien 95, der erste Platz in Monaco 96, 1997 mit Bridgestone-Reifen richtig, richtig, richtig gute Performance gehabt bei Prost Mugen und dann der Unfall in Montreal. Also, wo wart ihr, als Olivier Panis verunglückt ist? Wisst ihr es noch? Ich habe das erzählt, im Podcast kann ich das jetzt auch schon erzählen. Ich habe zwei Unfälle in meinem Leben, in der Jugend. Da erinnere ich mich noch ganz genau, wo ich war. Einmal war das Olivier Panis 97, da war ich im Urlaub mit meinen Eltern. Und Michael Schumacher 99. Das habe ich, glaube ich, euch schon mal erzählt, dass so war, dass ich im Schwimmbad war und der Bademeister damals eine Durchsage gemacht hat, Michael Schumacher schwer verunglückt und alle nach Hause gefahren sind oder zum Fernseher gegangen sind, um zu sehen, was da passiert ist. Entschuldigung. Dann sprechen wir natürlich darüber, wie das war, wieder in das Auto einzusteigen. Wir sprechen über Ron Dennis. Und er hat eine sehr interessante Anekdote zu Ron Dennis zu erzählen, die vielleicht das Bild von Ron Dennis beim einen oder anderen von euch ein bisschen verändern wird. Dann heiße Duelle auf der Strecke, seine Arbeit mit seinem Sohn Aurelien, der ja auch im Motorsport aktiv ist und. Also viele, viele Themen, die wir mit Olivier Panis abdecken. Und wie ihr das wisst, Interviews auf Englisch sind auf Englisch bei uns. Die werden nicht übersetzt und sind natürlich gespickt mit unseren kleinen Pausen, damit ihr vielleicht auch mal kurz auf Pause drücken könnt, wenn ihr dann irgendwie unterwegs seid oder so und dann nichts verpasst, einfach dann weiterhören könnt. Also, kurze Pause und dann geht's direkt rein in das Interview mit Olivier Panis hier bei Starting Grid, dem Formel 1 Magazin auf meinsportpodcast.de. Viel Spaß, Leute!
Willkommen bei meinsportpodcast.de. Nach 5 Jahren harter Arbeit und viel Schweiß und Tränen haben wir uns im Jahr 2018 endlich selbst gefunden. Wir sind Podcast.
Wir bieten euch die größte Auswahl an Sportpodcasts, die der deutschsprachige Raum so zu bieten hat.
Über 20 Sportarten, mehr als 45 Podcast-Serien, über 9000 veröffentlichte Podcasts und über 5 Millionen Podcast-Downloads allein im Jahr 2018.
Das ist einfach nur Wahnsinn.
Gemeinsam mit euch freuen wir uns auf ein spannendes und sportliches 2019. Danke, dass ihr alle dabei seid. Wir sind Podcast. Wir sind meinsportpodcast.de. meinsportpodcast.de ist Sport für die Ohren. Like uns auf Facebook.
So, at this time we are happily joined by former Formula One driver. He drove for Ligier, he drove for Prost, he drove for McLaren, he drove for Toyota, he drove everywhere. Olivier Panis, bonsoir.
Bonsoir, hi.
Ça va?
Bien, merci.
Good to see you, good to see you.
Thank you.
At dinner, you told us a very interesting story about German showmaster Stefan Raab, who you drove in a two-seater. And Christian and I were talking and we said, our listeners need to know that story. Tell us.
Well, I mean, the story was very funny in the beginning. I think less funny for him after he did the test with me in Formula One on the double-seater. He was played the games in the beginning. To be honest, I don't know who he was. But somebody told me it was a famous show in Germany. Very funny one. But what he played with the Formula One car I drove, it was not so funny for me. He put a can of Coke on the mirror, some stuff on the steering wheel. And I felt also the mechanics, McLaren people, was not really pleased with this. And it just told me, say, look, if when you have this guy back to you, do what you want with the car. Do the start, span off, take a curbs, everything. And to be honest, I did. And because he's, you know, I just play a bit shit with us and just want to show the Formula One is not a joke. It's a pure sport because he's laugh about this. You are sitting in the car, it's not very much physically, blah, blah, blah. And I did 2 laps like I never did, flat out everywhere. I mean, I span off, I did 360, and I give to him everything I can. And when he go out of the car, he was pretty sick, to be honest. And he said, oh man, I don't believe I not even one more time criticize the Formula One driver. He's so painful. It was funny in the end, to be honest. And he was respect more compared with the beginning. And everybody laughed, even us with him. And it was funny. But I met him also on the plane after the day test. And he was said to me, oh, I still think. I said, he just laughed it, but he said, I'm not feel very good. I mean, it was a very special experience. But he said thank you at the end of the day. And we check in. It was fun, to be honest.
He has a big mouth. He had
very big mouth in the beginning. But after he did the test, he shut up a bit, to be honest.
Let's turn the clock to your beginnings in motorsport. How did you get into motor racing?
Well, I started in go-kart just by... One day, I asked my father to have a test in go-kart. I did it, and really, I mean, I was very young. And 2 years after, I asked him again, but just for fun, and I really like it. And I asked him to do if it's possible to doing a first race, and is where I start, and I did. Like until 12 to 17, 5 years racing in go-kart. And the two last year I was professional for Tony Kart. And I did the World Cup and I did a lot of racing also in Italy. And I enjoy very much. I lead some very big race, but I never finished the race, even the French Championship. I was on the first row in the world championship, but if something happened to me all the time. I'm not very lucky in go-kart. I win a lot of racing, but the important racing I never won. And I was a bit pissed off about this. And when I start motor racing, we have a very famous school in France. It's called Elf Winfield. Is a really a school. You start, is a two school in France. Is the two, one in Paul Ricard, one in Manicourt. We have 300 young kids, each area, and you keep 200 to 600 students of motor racing. And I was one of the Paul Ricard. I won one of them. And after that, you have a big support by Elf. And this stage, he was also a manufacturer of smoking. He was a Gauloise blonde. And I still continue my career in motor racing because he followed me until Formula One. But what he said to me, he said, you have 1 year to learn and 1 year to win. If you don't win the second year, you go back home. It was the rule. I mean, it was rude, but, you know, I mean, it was the rule. And luckily, I did that. And is why I come to Formula One 1994, and I stop in 2004 racing. But I stay 2 more years in Toyota in this stage 2005 and 6 to be a test driver for them and reserve drivers, because I like to drive a car. And the end of 2004, I decide to stop because I have already kids. I have I think I did a lot of Grand Prix. I enjoy very much. But at this stage, I want to change a bit my view of motor racing. And I just want to, what I like is to drive. I don't like PRD, all these kind of things. Mm. We have a lot of asks. Sometimes he send me to China to just present one day a new cars, go back. I mean, all this travel, I mean, I was a bit tired in the end. And after that, I do 4 times Le Mans in the LMS with Peugeot and Oreca. After that, I do some championship in GT. I do the Ice Trophy. I mean, I did a lot of things. Until now, we decide to making a team 3 years ago. And yeah, we're happy to doing it. I'm happy with my life. I'm happy with my sportive life, really. I enjoy very much.
Your team, Panis-Barthes Competition. With the Ligier car, Christian. Let's talk about Ligier.
Yeah, let's fast forward a little bit from where you were talking, from the go-karting and the French Drivers Academy, basically. We have to move forward, otherwise we take too much of your time. Hockenheim 94. Mm-hmm. I remember that race quite well because I'm Austrian and Gerhard Berger won that particular event, and you came second in your first season. What are your memories of that weekend?
Yeah, it was fantastic, to be honest. After, I don't know how much, I mean, 6 or 7 Grand Prix, to doing a podium in Hockenheim behind Gerhard Berger, big name, big star in Formula One. Two Ligier boys finished second and third. Me second and Eric Bernard third. We are lucky at the beginning because it was a big accident on the first corner with Mika Hakkinen. And we enjoyed very much. And I think it was a big chance also for Ligier to going forward because on this time it was a strong time for Ligier. And first year I did first podium after 7 races, I think. And I still going on, and I think for me the first year was really promising because I finished 14 Grand Prix because we have 15 Grand Prix. I think it was a very good years. Podium points, I mean, for me it was a dream.
And then you've had your second podium in Australia in 95 in a car that was definitely not podium material, but all a bit lucky as well, but it was going quite well. And then you enter the 97 season, and Alain Prost, I believe, had taken over the team back then. You have Bridgestone tires, which were quite superior at the beginning to the good years. And I remembered that time quite well because I wasn't yet working in Formula One, so I had time to actually follow it. You were a championship contender in that early part of the season, weren't you?
Yeah, this was true. I mean, for me, 95, I did the podium in Australia, in Melbourne, in Adelaide. And 1996 is when I won Monaco. 97, I was enjoying so much. The car is just amazing. The Mugen Honda was really good. And we have the first team to using Bridgestone. And Bridgestone makes so nice job and progress. And until my accident, we are second in the championship. For sure, I enjoy very much. But I get this accident. It's happened, I mean, in Formula One sometime. And my life changed a little bit after that because I need to recover very quick. And 3 months after, I was in the car in Nürburgring and I scored a point. And this is part of the job. And, you know, after that, we have some difficult here with Prost. But, you know, I just enjoyed the time I passed there. And after that, I move up.
In 1997, he also had a lot of chances to win races, right, Christian?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And as we said, up until Montreal, you were really in there for the championship. It was a bit like Frentzen 2 years later with the Jordan. I think it was a similar situation where an underdog was coming from. But I think, first of all, I skipped Monaco 96. We have to go back there a bit later. But that accident, what do you actually remember of it? Do you have memories? I mean, I think you broke your legs or
I have a good memory and I'm not worried to talking about this. I have two broken legs. The right one was a bigger broken because I need to take 2 operations to rebuild everything and to fix everything. And I have 2 spikes on the 2 legs for 1 year that I racing with. But he said, if you have another accident with these 2 spikes on the legs, if it's happened, I think for you the Formula One is finished. And luckily it was not happened. And I still stay 3 months off and I go back even with the spike and I enjoy and I doing well. But I remember very clearly the accident. I have a wishbone failure on the right rear suspension. And I feel I span off and I start on the worst corner in Montreal where you are flat out. And when I hit the tires, I feel the monocoque is broke and I feel my legs was broken straight away. But I jump out myself alone. Don't jump. I just sit on the monocoque. But I doing this because I'm worried to be handicapped, to be honest. I mean, just I want to see all my body move, and when I saw it, I just wait the ambulance because I feel it, something is broken.
There are two, actually, in my life as a F1 fan, there are two accidents from the earlier years of my life which I can remember. The one is Schumacher, 1999, where I was at the time, and the other one is yours. I know exactly where I was to this day. I was on vacation with my parents on Corsica, and we were sitting in a restaurant and they were showing the race, and you had this accident. And at that time, many, many experts said you were one of the, if not the most talented driver in the grid, or on the grid at that time. Would you say you had, maybe if not for the accident, realistic chances to have ever become world champion in Formula One?
It was, to be honest, it was my dream, but I think in Formula One, to depend the way you choose, sometimes you think is the right way, sometimes it was not. When I felt I have the potential to be world champion is when I drove for McLaren in 2000, when I am a third driver and test driver, because I have the better car it was in the world in this stage. I compare myself with the one of the two best drivers, and this time also was Mika Hakkinen and David Coulthard. And my lap time, all the tests we're doing together was close or sometime front of them. And at this time I felt I enjoy very much this year with McLaren, because I know where I am. I know the speed I have, and I'm pretty confident. But after that, I racing again with BAE Honda for 2 years with Jacques Villeneuve, who was my teammate. We have some nice relationship together, but I beat him a lot of time. It's mean he's world champion. But, you know, I mean, I don't regret anything. I just was lucky people to do my passion on a very high level. And for 10 years, yeah, my dream was to be world champion, but it was not happen. You know, I mean, I have a good life. I think where I come and where I'm go out of Formula One, I think I grew up very well. I learned a lot of things. And I met some very strong people, very nice people. I met some bad people and profit people. I mean, in Formula One, you learn a lot of things, bad, but very good too. And you know, I mean, I if I backward in 1993 when I was Formula 3000 champion, I have a proposal to be managed by Keke Rosberg and Didier Coton. And then this stage, he managed Mika Hakkinen already. He was in the same time of me, a bit more or less. We going to Formula One a bit, going 1 year early, and I was Europe champion, I don't have any idea what it was Formula One, and all the people wait to go to see me and want to manage me and when blah blah blah. I was very scared because before that nobody explained to me what's happening Formula One. I mean, it was a big shock for me to have success like this and to be in, and wow. It's like when you have your kids, 4-year-old, and you're going to Euro Disney, you know? It's like, wow. And I say no to them. And I working with, when I won the championship, it was with Jean-Paul Driot, it was a Dams team. And he helped me to sign my first contract with Ligier. I have nobody in the beginning. And after that, I have a very nice lawyer, and I work with them until 1999. Badly, he dead in Monaco by a heart attack. And after that, I need to change my view of management. And I call Keke Rosberg and Didier Coton. And it was funny because Didier Coton say yes straight away, and Keke remember 1993. And I say, you say not to me in 1993. Why I say yes now? I say, look, Keke, everybody make a mistake. I make a mistake because if I'm going back 1993, for sure, I signed with you. Maybe I was in McLaren with Häkkinen, maybe for a while, you know. Is why I don't regret anything. But if I back with now, maybe I change some is not possible anyway. And because to be world champion, you need on the right time, on the right moment. And it was not the case for me, by my fault maybe, or anyway, or just is like this. It's like Jean Alesi too. I think Jean Alesi have the potential to be world champion. We won one Grand Prix each. And he not be one champion. I mean, you know, I mean, you have just one champion every year. I mean, we are 22 drivers in the and this time. Yeah, I mean, a bit not sad, because I don't think so. I'm sad. I'm just, yeah, my dream was to be world champion. It was not happen at all.
Wir klingen nicht nur gut, wenn wir direkt am Spielfeldrand stehen.
Die Adler Mannheim bleiben der Tabellenführer in der deutschen Eishockeyliga.
Oder direkt von der Schanze berichten.
Wir haben einen spannenden ersten Durchgang gesehen bei den Springern. Kamil Stoch führt vor Zielen Barthol.
Wir sehen dabei auch noch gut aus. Borgia Sauerland ist offizieller Ausstatter von meinsportpodcast.de. Borgia Sauerland. Berufsbekleidung, Arbeitsschutz und mehr auf borgia-sauerland.de.
Hallo, hier ist Benny Hövedes.
Hallo, liebe Hörer, mein Name ist Yannick Lebherz. Ich bin Schwimmer der deutschen Nationalmannschaft.
I'm David Coulthard.
Die Profis am Mikrofon, immer und überall auf meinsportpodcast.de.
That year 2000 was special for a particular reason. Back then, teams did a lot of testing, as you elaborated on earlier. And I think you were the first one of the already established drivers to go back into a testing role. And I remember quite well, because after you, Alex Wurz, who's also a fellow Austrian, joined. And Alex told me how close he actually came to a racing contract with McLaren. He had already done the contract. It's just Ron never signed it. How close were you to going racing with McLaren at that time?
I mean, in the beginning, when, you know, I was just explaining to you about this happened with McLaren in 2000. I was in at home and I was thinking after two very difficult here in Prost, I want to know, I mean, I want to move somewhere else. And I don't know if I doing Formula One the hereafter, because the proposal I get, it was not really interesting for me. I get a contract for IndyCar, Champ Car on this stage with Pat Patrick Racing. And I sign it, but I put the clause if something happened to Formula One, I stay in Formula One. And one day I just called Didier and KK. I say, look, I have an idea. And he said, yes, let me know. Why? Because you are a very good friend with Ron Dennis and Martin Wichmart. Why we don't ask them to be test driver and third driver? I want to know what is the best car. I want to know, compare my time with the best drivers. I need to know. And he said, but you crazy or what? To be test driver, it mean maybe he's finished. Oh, say I say, okay, just ask Ron and Martin and just tell me what he said, if he's crazy or not, but I take the risk. He said, but if you're slower to Mika and David, the most of the time by 5 tenths or whatever, you know he's finished. I say, yeah, I know he's finished, but, you know, I take the risk. And he asked, and he called Ron and called Adrian Newey. And Adrian Newey said, 100% yes. And Ron said, you know, I feel sad because he won the Grand Prix, and to give him this post, I don't feel very good. And I said, look, okay, organize me a meeting with Ron. I'm going to England. And I met Ron and explained to him why I want to do that. And he understood, but he said, you know, I don't feel comfortable to give you this post because you're a winner Grand Prix anyway. I said, look, Ron, I take the risk. Don't worry about this. To be honest, he respect me because he pay me a lot of money for test drivers, and we have
how much? Yeah,
on this stage, to be honest, it was $1.5 million to be a test driver. It was a lot of money for me. I mean, it was just a dream. And but I have so nice season, to be honest, with them, because when I came to McLaren, I was I feel this team outside is quite cold, to be honest. I'm a bit worried about this. But inside it was so warm. I mean, it was so nice people. Kim, David and Mika, we are friends afterward. It was so nice with me. Respect my job. Enjoy together. I mean, and I show, and I know, to be honest, personally, I know where is my performance for myself. Okay, I show to everybody else I was quick. It's what he gave me the chance to go back in Formula One with BAE Honda, because everybody saw the lap time on the test. And he gave me another chance also. But Ron said, I want to keep you for one more year, because he had the contract with David and want to respect. I mean, this I 100% agree. But I say, Ron, if I do one more year, I feel I lose the spirit of racing. 2 years don't doing start, and I say, no, I'm not ready for that. And he put me a clause on my contract, was very hard, because he said, I don't want you go to the not very good team, because you need to have a good team to show your potential. I let you go if you are on the top five team in the championship. That means it's quite close, huh? When you have McLaren, Ferrari, Benetton, and BAR was fifth, luckily. I have a long talk with Bernie Ecclestone, because everybody know Bernie Ecclestone by the boss of Formula One, very expensive, a lot get a lot of money, but he like the drivers. And I have a big meeting with him, and I explained to him I want to go back to Formula One. He was just the last French was in Formula One. Sorry. And he helped me to go back in Formula One with BAR. It was Bernie. Is why I say thank you for him for the most of the time. And I restart Formula One with BAR, and after that, Toyota.
No. Go ahead.
So, what did Bernie actually do to get you that cockpit?
He called.
I think Bernie said, okay, I understood your point. We have a nice talk. And he said, let me check what I can do. But I think he called, at this stage, it was Greg Pollock, the boss of BAR. He called him and he explained my vision, and I'm free, and I think Greg Pollock want to change Ricardo Zonta. After that, I'm working with Zonta in Toyota. I like this guy very much. But at this stage, he want to change the drivers. I was lucky to this space was free. But Bernie helped me to get this seat for sure.
What were people often say about Ron Dennis, that he's a cold-hearted, not so sympathetic boss. But now when I hear you talking, it's different.
I mean, I need to explain one small thing, funny things with Ron. When I started working with Ron, I meet him all the time on the factory. He was very nice guy, funny guy, to be honest. He's the in the restaurant, he's the first guy threw the bread to somebody. I mean, he's very a laughing guy, a very funny guy. But all during the winter test, I just saw him in the factory, and he was like this all the time. I said, well, he's really funny guy, and I felt the same before I know him. And I arrive in Melbourne after the team, because I was testing before the first Grand Prix somewhere. And I arrive in Melbourne on Wednesday. I arrive quite late, just for dinner, I think. I was on the room and the phone ring. And I take the phone, it was Ron. He say, oh, you arrive? I say, yeah, just arrive, I take a shower. Okay, go down with us, we have a dinner, we're going to dinner. I say, okay, well, we're going to dinner with Mika, Norma Hogg, all the staff of McLaren. We have a fantastic dinner. We laugh a lot. I mean, really funny night. Thursday morning, I go into the circuit. It's the first time I met him in the circuit, a proper, you know, boss of McLaren. Thursday morning, I arrive in the circuit. I just saw him and I just say, hey, hello, Ron. He don't answer me. The face was completely closed. He don't say anything to me for all day. I say, oh, shit, maybe last night I doing something wrong or whatever. I was very worried, you know, about this. I say, shit, I make something wrong anyway. He don't want to talk to me anymore. I was really scary because I don't want to make a mistake on a team like this. Anyway, I go back to the hotel. Same things. 8 o'clock in the evening, the phone ring. It was Ron. Hey, Olive, you're going down? We have a dinner. I say, okay, I'm going down. And the same things. Laughing, blah, blah, blah. Don't talking about day. But in my mind, I say, but this guy is fucking crazy or what? I mean, last night we're doing funny dinner. All day, don't even say hello to me in the circuit. And tonight we have lovely dinner again, funny. I said, well, I don't really understand. Anyway, the day after I go arrive in the circuit, same things. No hello, nothing. I said, this for me is not possible. I don't understand. And I just tried to call him and speak to him. I said, Ron, when you have 5 minutes during the day, I would like to speak with you because I need to know something about our relationship. He said, I don't have time today. We'll see tonight. But really, you know, like a bit rude, you know. And in the evening, same things. He called me and said, go for dinner with us, blah, blah, blah. I said, look, I need to see you 5 minutes before we're going to dinner. I need to talk with you. And we talked together going downstairs. We sit down together and said, Ron, I'm French. I'm not English. I don't know the way you work, but if I like you, I like you on the evening, but also during the day. I'm polite, I say hello, whatever. Ah, okay, say Olive, I understand. We make a deal. When I am in the circuit, I am the boss of McLaren. I don't want to show anything else about no people. I'm the boss of McLaren, I need to be straight, blah, blah, blah. A bit cold and, you know, I say, okay. But I say, I feel not very good because if I don't say hello to you and don't feel good with you, I mean, you know, I'm not like you or like maybe English people, I don't know. I say, okay, we make a deal. When you arrive in the morning, if I doing this to you, it means everything is okay. Okay, fair enough. Day after, I go into the circuit, he look at me doing this. It means I think everything is okay. It was funny, it's two people. Ron is two people. One at home, one in the factory, and one in the circuit. It's two different people, but I love him. I mean, for me, I meet some people in Formula One really nice, and he's one of the people.
Did you ever go on his airplane? Because there's urban legends that you had to put your shoes off when you actually went on Ron's plane.
Yeah, I mean, when you're going to the plane of Ron or the house of Ron, the shoes stay outside. Or if you're going to the plane, before you go to the plane, you take the shoes out and you put somewhere. But this is Ron style. I mean, at home, I mean, the shoes stay outside. He's Ron. I mean, Ron is really like the factory, like the team. All the detail for him is so important. Even the shoe. I mean, it's the rule. For me, it don't make me good or not, or bad or bad feeling, but I mean, it's the rule. If he don't like this, he don't like this. I mean, it's his plane, it's his home. Fair enough.
In 1998 and 1999, McLaren had killer cars. Two world championships, the fastest car on the track. You told us a story with Adrian Newey and the wing. Maybe you want to tell it again?
I mean, for me, Adrian Newey was the guy I learned the most in. The most technically part I learned was with him. I love this guy. Because if the director technical is the closer one I know, is the closer one to the drivers and the mechanics. This guy is just unbelievable, intelligent, but also human being, just fantastic. I passed 1 year with him. I learned so many, many things. And the first time I drove the McLaren, I remember like yesterday, was in Manicourt in the end of 1999. And when I jumped to the car in Manicourt and accelerated the first straight line, after 250k, I feel the car is getting more speed and more speed like a free car. I was really worried because I said, this is not normal. It's what I felt with the Prost the week before the Grand Prix because we have a different drag of the car. And I just did one lap. I go back to the pits and I say, Adrian, I think I lose something on the back of the car because the car accelerate after 250. No, I said, this is normal, Olive. We have some elastic front and rear wing. I mean, it was the rule. I mean, he was so intelligent and he explained to me the way it worked. He was so clever. I mean, and this car just enjoyed myself like I never enjoyed before.
In 2000, you were test driver. How did you compare speed-wise to Mika Häkkinen and David Coulthard?
I was very lucky with Ron and Adrien because he all the time gave me the same car of David of Mika on the test schedule. And also the same amount of fuel and same tires sometime during the day. I was pretty fair for them because I think I'm working very hard for them because I did 70 days test during the season. 27,000 kilometers for 1 year. I think is I don't do that with my proper car, to be honest. I did a lot of tests and a lot of work with them. And he respect me for that because I never complain. I enjoy myself, you know, to drive the best car, to have sometime 15 new set of tires per day. I mean, you just enjoy yourself, you know, and it's why I never complain. And it was, we have so good relationship together. I mean, and huge respect. It gave me the chance to compare myself with Mika and David. And this is why it's nice of them. And
er war ein Nationalheld, ein Vorbild, der Kapitän, der Südafrika vereinen sollte. Doch dann verkaufte er den Sport für eine Lederjacke. Hansi Cronje, gefeierter Cricketstar, ein Mann wie Franz Beckenbauer nur in Südafrika und dann gestürzt wie ein Betrüger. Spielmanipulation, Wettmafia, ein tödlicher Flugzeugabsturz. Unfall oder Mord? Tatort Sport, die neue Episode. Hansi Cronje verriet den Sport für eine Lederjacke. Jetzt hören, überall, wo es Podcasts gibt.
And everybody was, I don't say surprised, but he was really happy for the lap time I did the most of the time with the same car of the world champion. And Mika was so nice with me too, because the middle of the season is just a small part. He said to Ron, I don't want to test anymore because I don't like testing because it's tired me. And we laughed together about this. But he said, I trust what Olivier is doing. And we have the same type of driving style. And I want to, I no problem to use the setup he prepared for the race. And is why I think we are very close with Mika, but I was very close with David also. But Mika was testing less to David. And I think this year David did too many tests and I think he was a bit tired in the middle of the season compared with Mika.
Kalt 90, der Wintersport-Talk. Aktuelle News und Ergebnisse von Curling bis Skeleton, von Alpinski bis Eiskunstlauf. Kalt 90 auf meinsportpodcast.de. Meinsportpodcast.de ist Sport für die Ohren. Folge uns auf Twitter.
In 2001, you went to BAR, British American Racing. You were your best, I have it here in front of me, your best position in the World Championship was 14th, mm-hmm. And at Toyota, also 14th.
Yeah.
But both teams had so much money backing the teams from mm-hmm. the get-go. What do you think went wrong with the teams that they could not hold it up or have more success?
I mean, what I said about this, I mean, we have 2 years in BAR. I know Jacques by the past, but we have very 2 years, hard years together. We're working very well together with the team, with the engineer, but the team was really brand new for me. I mean, you know, when you compare with Williams team, McLaren team, I mean, some team with so much here experience. And when you're making like a new team like BIR, and you want to compete with these people, if you're a bit clever, you know it's not possible. All the experience and the knowledge all these people have, you don't buy. Even if you're the most rich people, you don't buy the experience. You buy everything you want, but the experience, you need to make it. And it's what we try to do it. And I think BAR is grew up. After that is came Ross Brawn, and he was winning champion. What we did with Toyota, it was a bit same things. Toyota is the biggest team I never met in Formula One. The most, we are 1,200 people on this team, 2004. Just, it's the biggest team I never see in my life in Formula One. The factory in Cologne, I never saw a huge factory like this for Formula One. I met some very nice people, but the point is the mentality of the Japanese and the European people is very different. And to mix everything together, to working well together, it takes really long time. Is working, to be honest, because with Toyota, I did a second row in Indianapolis. We have in 2004, we have a pretty good car, to be honest. I fighting with Hakkinen, with Raikkonen, he was in McLaren for the victory. But the team make a wrong strategy, but whatever. We have the speed in 2004. But I think when Toyota decide to stop in 2009, if I don't make a mistake, I think this year it was the best car ever in Formula One. For sure, if he's racing, he's like a Honda when he sold the team to Ross Brawn. For me, it was the winning car. But to compete with the team like McLaren, Williams, Ferrari, you don't do that on 2, 3, 4, 5 years. I mean, even if you are rich, you don't buy the experience.
In preparation for this interview, I watched some legendary scenes from you, and I found one scene where you were at BAR in Hockenheim 2001, where you fought against Jano Trulli for 2 rounds. I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah, but I remember very well.
Such a high-speed duel, and you were fighting next to the Jordan, and you were like getting closer and closer and getting beside him, but you don't really get it. Yeah. And then you get him, you cut the corner a little bit, and afterwards he spun out. Yeah. So quite funny ending. The old Hockenheim Ring is such a mystic place. Tell us about those years then.
I mean, this race, I love this old Hockenheim circuit because I won in Formula 3000 this circuit in 1993. I love this circuit. I know it's crazy circuit. But the fight with Jano is so funny because when I take a tour, I have so good speed to try to overtake him. But when I move next to him, like the car is slowed down. Yeah. And I don't manage to overtake him. I was so pissed off in the car. I said, look. And Jano was on this stage, my friend. And I don't want, you know, to make a mistake of him too. But him the same. And we have a big battle for 2 laps. But it was really funny on the car, to be honest. I enjoy very much. And when I catch him, I think he spun because he don't want to hit me.
Yeah.
More or less.
Yeah, he was in the sandwich.
Yeah, it was one good remember with Jano.
It was amazing to see you they put on the onboard for you, and you were very, very calm. So it seemed for us, but I think inside the helmet, you were fuming.
Yeah, exactly. It was a fire of me. I mean, I say, fuck, I need to get him. And it was happened, but it was just for like... ego people, just for ego, because we don't even battle for points.
So coming to Formula One from 1994 to when you left Formula One, what was the best time for a Formula One driver for you? Which car did you like to drive the most?
To be honest, the best time for me was in 1997 before my accident when I was fighting for a championship. This is what's good to remember. Monaco is one of the best, but Monaco, it was something special. 1997, I have the car every Grand Prix to fight for podium or victory. This is make a big difference. And the best car I drove ever it was the McLaren in 2000. I enjoy so much myself personally in this car. It was just amazing car.
Before we get to the finish and with Monaco 1996, of course, I think we need to speak about something that is very interesting for us fans right now in Formula One. When you were driving in the late 90s, there were so many characters in Formula One. There was Jacques Villeneuve, there was, of course, Michael, so many others with character, with edges. And right now, many people say that Formula One drivers are too rounded, too nice sometimes. Would you say the same?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but, you know, and this time when we are in Formula One, we don't have any clause on the contract. We said what we feel. We say what we want, and we don't care about what say the journalist. We don't have the internet. We don't have Facebook. We don't have Instagram. We don't have all this shit. I mean, and we do what we want, really. I mean, it was when I was signed for Toyota until 2003, we have on the contracts the clause. We don't allowed to say the car is not good, the team is not good. We have so many things, if not possible to say or to say your feeling. And why I'm start to be pissed off with Formula One, and is one of the thing is why I'm stop one day when I put everything together, like the Pierre Day, the when he sent me to somewhere over the world to present one car, and also all this. Close, we don't allow to say what we want. All these kind of things, when I put on the right and I put the negative point and the positive point, for me it was too much negative points. And it was when I decided to stop, it was about this. Not about to drive, because I drive, I enjoy so much my 2 years like a test driver at the end of my career with Toyota, because I did a lot of laps. I enjoy very much. But I was so, these 2 years so nice with me, because I do what I want driving, and I don't do what I don't like the end of my career with all the constructor coming, all this clothes, all this, like you need to be clean with the clothes. This is why give me shit or this. And I love Formula One for all my life. It's part of my blood. I enjoy so much. It changed my life completely. But to be honest, the end of the day, when I saw Formula One now, I love it, because I looking. And I think I looking every Grand Prix. But it's not the Formula One I was dreaming when I was young. Maybe for the young generation, maybe like it, because he don't know what we have before. I don't want to be like old man to say it's better when I'm driving or when is my time. I don't say that. I said the Formula One today, with all the new technology, all the this tires wear situation. I mean, when you start the race, you are 6-7 seconds of the place compared with the lap time in qualifying. Yeah. For me, don't make any sense. Uh-huh. For me, this is not racing. Right. But it's my personal point of view. But I think, when I spoke with Lewis or with Kimi or with the people I know, some young, now I don't know much. I think it's the same feeling for them. He don't say it because it's not possible to say, maybe. But, you know, when you have, is what one day say Lewis, when you have the best car, when you have the car to win, whatever is it, even if it's not fun, if you win the race, is what we want when you are Formula One drivers. Maybe he enjoy less compared with 5-6 years ago, but he's still winning. And what I felt about Lewis when he saw him happy to win, happy to compete, happy to win a championship, I like this type of people, really. I mean, because he's one of the guys he showed to everywhere in the world. The toys. I mean, he gained the money, but he showed to everybody he loves cars. He have a lot of cars. He likes the plane. He showed the plane. He showed everything he likes. For me, this is one of the drivers making fun about what he enjoys. all the drive afterward is like what you said. I feel is a bit flat or, you know, too nice. But because maybe it's not possible to do anything else.
Great answer.
We're going to finish off on a positive note. Monaco 96, that weekend, I remember quite vividly, I was 14 and I was sitting in the living room of my parents, and I remember when you crossed the finish line in that Bleu Ligier, Frenchman in more or less France. It was just an incredible image. If someone had told you that morning you're going to win the Monaco Grand Prix, I mean, you just would never have expected that, would have you?
I surprise you, but when I wake up, I mean, if I backward a bit on Friday test free practice, I was 4th or 5th all the time. I know the car I have, and this time I tell Honda people and DJ people, if we're working very well, it's possible to do something strong in Monaco before we came. And I working on the engine map, like drivability of the engine, for 2 days, the test before Monaco, and I give a shit to the Honda engineer to say, I want this, I want that for Monaco, Monaco, Monaco. And at first set in qualifying, I was 4th in the grid. And you know, I remember if we have 3 or 4 sets, because we have half an hour or 1 hour qualifying anyway, it was, you know, we have time in qualifying. I have technical issue, electronic issue. I need to stop. And I'm waiting to take the T car. And this stage, we have 3 cars. But Pedro Diniz destroyed the first car. He takes the T car and crash again. It means I don't go out until the end of the qualifying, and I just backward, because in Monaco, every set you put, the lap time is improved anyway. And I saw my engineer cry, the Honda engineer, because it was on that issue problem, and he was crying. I said, look, man, stop to cry. This like this is like this. But tomorrow we finish on the podium. And just look at me and he laughed. He said, this fucking guy is fucking stupid. I believe it. He believed that. But anyway, I was so unhappy. I go back to the hotel. My wife was there. And to be honest, I slept very well. And when I wake up in the morning, I look out on the windows. I saw the rain. I said to Anne, I said, look, Anne, I think I finished in the podium today. She think I'm crazy too, you know, but I don't care. I mean, it was my feeling. I arrived on the warm-up. I did the best lap time in the warm-up. And everybody said, yeah, but it's maybe don't have a fuel, whatever. I mean, you know, in the paddock. And me, I know the fuel I have. I know where I am. And I know the speed I get on the wet. I was pretty confident. But for sure, I never thinking I win the race, for sure. But when I start the race and I overtake 7 cars on the wet in Monaco, I feel I really fly. I don't know why. And we pit stop on the right time. We pit 7. We go out 4th. And when I saw Eddie Irvine in front of me, my car was much better to the Ferrari on this stage. And I take the overtaking, I hit him, whatever. I was so lucky, I mean, this race. But I feel really, I don't know. I mean, this way I feel I just fly compared with everybody else, because I don't know how many lap record I did to close the gap with Jean Alesi. And luckily, I mean, for me, Damon Hill blew up the engine. I passed 2nd. Jean hit the barrier and killed the suspension. And I was leading the race. But the problem is, 10 laps before to the end, everybody called me to pit because I don't have enough fuel to go to the end. And I said, no, I don't pit. I managed to to reduce my consumption. Just let me know the number, blah, blah, blah. Even Flavio talked to me in the radio. Say, Olive, you need to pit stop. Otherwise, you stop on the tracks. I said, don't worry. Just give me the number. I mean, I know the race is over 2 hours, it stop. Just give me the numbers. And I remember it was David Coulthard behind me, catch me, and I show him when I want to accelerate, I make a gap. But I'm more intelligent to everybody else. I just was lucky this stage. And to win sometimes, you need to be lucky. I did the lap with the flag. We stopped the car on the And when it was the podium, and we try after that, the engineer start to restart the car. It never restart. It mean the car was completely empty. But when you are lucky, you know, I mean, is the winning, some win is part of like some time, and this stage was my time.
And in one of the most iconic places of them all in Formula One.
Yeah, if you told me which Grand Prix you want to win, for sure I'd tell you 100% Monaco, for sure.
Not even France? Not even Monaco? No. No?
Well, I really want like to win in France, but Monaco is, for me, is the Grand Prix, the special Grand Prix you have during the season. It's very special.
Why is that?
Because it's a... All the time we're talking about safety. Monaco is the most, not the most dangerous, but the no safety track you have during the season. But I think because it's a glamour situation, you're near to the beach, the ambience, I mean, everything. And I love to race on the city track. I mean, I win Po many times in Formula Renault and Formula 3. I like this type of circuit. Is, you know, Monaco is, some driver like it, some driver hate it, and I'm one of the driver like it.
What do you remember of the party that night? I think just a nice little story to finish off this podcast.
I tell you, I mean, when I won the race, after the race, someone said, "You have a smoking with you?" I said, "What am I smoking?" I mean, you know, a tie. Mm. I mean, I said, for sure I don't. My wife take a nice dress, luckily, because we want to have a dinner after the race somewhere. And I know it's the Prince of Monaco try to open some shop to give me a tie to be on the dinner with the Prince Albert, with the Prince Rainier, with the two daughters. It was a special dinner. It was fantastic, to be honest. For me, it was new people I met. It was a dream, to be honest, for me, to be there. But afterward, we go out with my wife to have a drink together, because everything happened to me this night. And the morning after one, afterward, we need to do some picture for Paris Match, very like a People magazine. For me, it was a bit of shock of this. But luckily, the day after, I need to be in Barcelona for testing. It's mean, you know, I have one day off, enjoy, but I'm straight away back to test, and it gives me some free time. But it was, to be honest, this Grand Prix changed my life, really. I mean, in terms of respect to all the drivers, respect to all the team, but also respect to the press, to the people support me for many years. It changed my life, really. I mean, I need to say that. Yeah, it changed my life for many years.
Maybe as a very last point, and then we cut it off, we leave you. Your son, Aurélien, is also a race driver.
100% Sport. Jederzeit auf Abruf. Auf meinsportpodcast.de. Double Trouble. One. Der Dart-Talk auf meinsportpodcast.de. Ob Ring, Bull oder Bullseye. Jeder Wurf wird analysiert und diskutiert. Double Trouble. Der Dart-Talk mit Christian Ömicke auf meinsportpodcast.de.
You as a father, would you have ever said before you had a son that you would see your son driving a motor racing car, and how do you support him?
The question is very nice and very good, but to be honest, when I was so proud of when she said, the first kids is a boys, you know, I mean, for me it was unbelievable. First kids, boys, start to thinking to play with them. I don't thinking about motor racing, but when Aurélien born, when I start Formula One. He born in October 1994. First of all, when I get Aurélien, I feel more free for my normal life, because I say if something happened to me, like a bad accident, maybe dead. My wife is not alone. She have a kids now. You know, it's very bizarre. Mm. But it's give me just free hair. Anyway, and I did my career. I take him sometime with me, but I not like him very much. Because, you know, we never know what's happened. And I have this accident in 97. I know when he go to see me in the hospital or... And I was on the chair for 3 weeks and he hit my legs and he was pissed off because I don't play football with him. But this is what's funny. I mean, yeah. And what we said with Anne, with my wife, we said, for sure we try everything we can. He don't do or he don't drive any go-kart or any cars. Is what the first feeling we have, we don't push him on this way. It's mean we push him for all the sport. He do football, he do many things, fighting anyway. And every years until 9 years old, he asks us to do a go-kart. And we say no, no, no. We insist until he have 13 years old and he still asks me again. I say no. I said to him, you need to give a chance to him to try. But for me, I think it was a bad mistake. Because he love it. Sorry.
No problem.
Because he love it. And he said, I want to try. I want to make him one race to be sure. And I follow him. And I think something happened. Maybe he's scared on the first race. He's fighting with all those people. And never seen work anyway. And after that, I help him because he's the passion of this. And I doing Formula 4 with him. We're doing Formula Renault Euro Cup. And we're still doing 3.5. He's winning some race in Euro Cup. He's winning some race in 3.5. He fight for the championship in 2016, but he have accident in Monza. And he need to took a small operation for the back. And that's all. I mean, I think he's difficult to say that, but if I'm go back hood again, if I need to do again, I want to be, because I'm ex Formula One driver. I said, if you know, when you start Formula Four in France, you don't test anything anywhere is the rule. And I want to follow the rule to be nice and to be clean with everybody. But when I saw what doing everybody else, I think if I back would, I for sure I give in to him 1 year testing before we came to Formula 4. And I think we destroy everybody else. But, you know, I mean, on this stage, I want to be clean. And he did very well for all series he did. And after that, when we want to do to doing maybe GP2, but when I asked with, I spoke with Prema and we asked me, you need to have $2 million budget to be on the Prema team and to win the championship. And this stage, I say, man, nah, it's too much. And even him say, no, look, what you do for me and the work you do for me for sponsorship, I want to be professional driver one day. I do my best. But if he's not in Formula One, it's not a big deal. He want to be, I think, for sure. But he understand it's quite difficult to achieve that, or you are a milliardaire. But I think when I saw today with Stroll, with some driver arrive with a very rich parent or business wise, you know, I respect, because I think what did this the father of Stroll with the kids, he won the Formula 3 Rome Championship. I think he have some talent, really. I mean, he's lucky to have a father like him to arrive maybe on the dream. I mean, I respect that. But for Aurelia, he said, look, I want to prove myself. I need to have, you know, I need to be professional drivers because I'm very good. And he said, you need to stop to put the money in. I mean, the Formula One gave me so much fun, and also, I mean, I feel I am very lucky boys to get some good money and to have a good life. and Aurelien said, now you don't spend your money you gain to have your good life still maybe to the end. Just for me. I mean, I have three kids. I have one boy and two daughters. I was not very lucky for one thing. So one, he chose motor racing, and my two daughters is horses. I don't know why one don't want to play ping pong and the two girls don't want to dance, because for me, I give a new shoes or new racket every day. I mean, it costs less to me. But no, it's just funny. I mean, I'm very pleased with Aurelien because he's a very serious kid. What he did, he did himself. And I'm very pleased of him. I'm sure in 1 year or 2 years' time, he's a professional driver for somewhere.
I think you raised beautiful kids in a good way because you gave your way to your kids.
Well, I try to do my best, but I think I need to say one very good things. For Aurelien and for the girls, I was not there many times. I think lucky I am is to have my wife to looking after them and to give to them a proper, respect people. I mean, be nice with everybody else. And when the people was not nice with you, you need to kill them. This is just the point. But she's doing the job.
Monsieur Panis, merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup à vous.
Bonne chance en allemand.
Oui, ça, on a besoin de chance.
Joyeux Noël et bonne année.
Merci, pareil pour vous. Thank you.
Thank you.
Die MSP-WG. Jeden Sonntag spricht unsere Redaktions-WG beim Feierabendtisch über alles, worüber man halt so spricht. Ob mit Sportbezug oder ohne. Und du kannst mitmachen. Sprich mit im Podcast oder beteilige dich über den Hashtag MSPWG. Die MSPWG auf meinsportpodcast.de. Sportplatz mit Malte Asmus und Andreas Thies. Täglich neue Podcasts aus der Welt des Sports. Von Airhockey bis Zehnkampf. Berichterstattungen, Interviews und Fakten. Sportplatz auf meinsportpodcast.de.
Noch einmal kurz zurück hier bei Starting Grid, dem Formel 1 Magazin auf meinsportpodcast.de. Kevin Scheuren hier nochmal für euch. Wow, oder? Das war geil. Also viele Sachen, die ich selber noch nicht wusste, wie viel ein Testfahrer bei McLaren Mercedes verdient. So Zusammenhänge auch mit Ron Dennis, die Geschichte und dieser Anfang mit Stefan Raab, da war beim Abendessen fast noch ein bisschen besser, weil er da kein Mikrofon vor der Nase hatte und hat er erzählt. Schade, dass sie da nicht dabei sein konnte. Aber wir hoffen, dass wir durch dieses Interview so viele Informationen wie möglich über Olivier Panis für euch bereitstellen konnten und er euch auch gegeben hat. Er war sehr bereitwillig mit Informationen und vielleicht sehen wir uns nochmal wieder, denn er hat uns ja eingeladen, auch bei einem ELMS-Rennen, vielleicht sogar in Le Mans dabei zu sein, da mal ein bisschen durch die Kulissen von Panis-Bates Competition zu schauen. Und ja, vielleicht können wir das Interview nochmal vertiefen. Aber hey, eine Stunde, so kurz nach Weihnachten, da kommen die Geschenke nochmal kurz danach. So, deswegen machen wir jetzt schon Schluss. Wir hören uns an Silvester wieder zu unserer großen F1 Deutschland Podcast Gala mit allen Podcastern, die hier in freien Podcasts oder anderen Podcasts in Deutschland aktiv sind. Ich freue mich sehr drauf. War mir ganz wichtig, die alle einzuladen und bin drauf gespannt, wie das alle findet. Der Plan ist, dass alle Podcaster diesen Podcast auf ihren Feeds hochladen und wir dann einen großen Simul-Podcast sozusagen haben an Silvester, den alle hören können, die alle Formel-1-Podcasts in Deutschland hören. Und bin sehr gespannt, wie das wird. Wenn euch das gefallen hat heute, das Interview mit Olivier Panis, was hat euch besonders gefallen? Hat euch etwas überrascht? Hat euch etwas schockiert? Hat euch etwas zum Lachen gebracht? Dann schreibt das gerne in unsere Gruppe, Starting Grid F1 Fans. Dort haben wir einen Thread aufgemacht zu diesem Podcast, diesem Interview mit Olivier Panis. Dann natürlich unsere Telegram-Gruppe. Telegram, kostenfreier Messenger, den ihr ohne eure Handynummer anzugeben benutzen könnt. Und das ist eine wirklich ganz, ganz tolle Sache. Und diese Gruppe ist sehr aktiv, muss man sagen. Also wir haben aktuell, ich schaue mal rein, 162 Mitglieder und da ist es wirklich richtig aktiv. Ole sagt, ihr müsst mir auf Facebook posten wegen dem Algorithmus. Mir ist es im Endeffekt egal, Hauptsache wir kommunizieren miteinander. Das ist mir ganz wichtig und auf beiden Ebenen passiert das. Also Starting Grid F1 Fans bei Facebook, @StartingGrid, einfach mal danach suchen bei Telegram. Wichtig ist, dass ihr das @ mit reinnimmt. Und was haben wir noch? Starting Grid MSP bei Twitter, wenn ihr da mit uns in Kontakt treten wollt. Uns persönlich findet ihr bei Twitter unter @mst_christian_n für Christian Nimmervoll, @MikeWeiß, MIKEVICE für Ole Waschkau und @KS_0811 für meine Wenigkeit Kevin Scheuren. Kevin_Scheuren bei Instagram, Ole Waschkau bei Instagram, wenn ihr Ole finden wollt. Ich schaue da nochmal genau rein, was es denn ist. Und Christian hat derzeit kein Instagram. Aber Ole hat Instagram und zwar unter, ja, Ole Waschkau. Einfach zusammengeschrieben und dann findet ihr ihn auch dort. Abonniert ihn gerne, er wird sich freuen. Und ja, wie hat euch auch unser kleiner, besonderer Jahresrückblick gefallen? Ole hat es ja mit spitzer Zunge gemacht. Wir haben schon sehr, sehr viel Feedback dazu gelesen. Waren einige Leute sehr angetan von. Das soll auch ein wiederkehrendes Element werden. So ein bisschen dieser noch bissigere Blick auf die Formel 1. Denn wenn wir eins tun sollten, Freunde, 2019, dann die Formel 1 nicht so ernst nehmen. Ja, wir nehmen sie ernst und wir wollen da ernsthaft drüber diskutieren, aber manchmal auch mal daran vorbeischrammen und ja, auch ein bisschen kontrovers mal was für euch präsentieren. Gefällt euch das, gefällt euch das nicht? Feedback auf jeden Fall gerne in die genannten Kanäle oder auch in eine Rezension bei iTunes, wenn wir uns sehr darüber freuen, auch 2019 natürlich. Ja, wir hören uns also Silvester wieder, wünsche euch aber jetzt schon an dieser Stelle einen guten Rutsch ins neue Jahr. Kommt gesund rein, passt auf euch auf, böllert nicht zu viel und böllert vor allem nicht eure Hände weg, denn wir wollen ja alle noch im nächsten Jahr den Download-Button klicken wollen für Starting Grid und wir hoffen, dass wir 2019 nochmal wieder eine Live-Ausgabe machen können, um mit euch auch zu sprechen. Ja, das war's. Mein Name ist Kevin Scheuren und bis zur Silvester-Ausgabe gilt natürlich wie immer nur eins, keep racing.
Sport für die Ohren. In deinem Podcatcher und auf meinsportpodcast.de. Starting Grid, der Podcast rund um den teuersten Sport der Welt. Mit Interviews.
They have everything on paper required to win the World Championship.
Und Analysen.
Taktik und Ferrari klappt nicht immer gut.
Vor und nach jedem Grand Prix. Starting Grid. Die Formel 1 Show mit Kevin Scheuren und Ole Waschkau wird dir präsentiert von motorsporttotal.com und formel1.de. Keep racing auf meinsportpodcast.de.
Dieser Podcast wird vermarktet durch die Podcastbude.